You are listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, and this is the University of British Columbia's very first Indigenous radio collective, and this is the very first episode. Salia Joseph, Queen Sna, Tanachintla, Squahomishna Namoth, Ohomeo, Alowin, Yaxluin, Isqualuin, Iotin, Sequetil, Yahichka, Masquium, Osiam.
Pansi, Samantha, Nitsi Keshlan, Dawson Creek, Otsi, Niam, Mitchif, Isquoyo, Kina, Naskop, Dipnanawau, Masquium.
Hello, my name is Salia Joseph. I'm from Squamish and Nanaimo Nations on my dad's side, and I'm Jewish and British on my mom's.
Hi, I'm Samantha Nock. I'm Métis. I'm from Dawson Creek. My family comes from Isle of Cross or Sigitawaka, Northern Saskatchewan.
So we'd like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting today on the unceded ancestral and traditional territory of the Musqueam people, who we're always eternally grateful for and in debt to in terms of being here on their land. Welcome to our newly founded radio show, Without a Name. I got interested in radio when I did my practicum with the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program last year, and I created a research podcast series called Mingling with Matriarchs, which you can find on the CITR website, and it centered the voices of Native women on campus and the research that they were doing. And then this opportunity arose out of that, where CITR worked hard to find funding to hire an Indigenous collective coordinator, a women's collective coordinator, and an access and diversity coordinator. And so I got hired to be the Indigenous collective coordinator, which is really exciting. And so it's my job to do a bunch of outreach and find people that are interested. And so the collective so far, which is growing every day, is comprised of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who are interested in both radio and just Indigenous topics. And so basically we have an hour of programming every week on Mondays from 11 till 12, where we will be doing different interviews. We will be always talking about what's happening locally and federally in the news. And then we have what we'll call a hot topic for each episode. So we'll have a theme. And as we mentioned, this week our theme is going to be Indigenous veterans. And then Sam and I are going to talk about the swearing-in ceremony.
I was interested in joining this radio collective. I saw Celia kind of do a call-out on good old Facebook, looking for folks who'd be interested. And I was just, that seems like such a great idea. And I've always been a sucker for talk radio. I love talk radio. I grew up listening to the CBC. I'm also now obsessed with podcasts. Mm. So I listen, or I spend a lot of my time listening to other people talk.
Mm.
And I think it's so cool because everybody has really cool stories, and our stories are everything. Like, as Indigenous people, our stories are in everything we do. They are us. We are just comprised of our stories. And I think having this space in CITR through this collective to just highlight our stories in the collective, highlight other Indigenous folks' stories, highlight music and news and all these really cool things that happen in our community is just so integral and just such a fantastic way to do something that can be so amazing on campus. Because UBC is thirsting for Indigenous, cool Indigenous things.
As opposed to the uncool Indigenous things.
I think I've done some uncool Indigenous things.
Part of my research also looked around like podcasting as a way for disseminating research and knowledge. And so it's exciting to think about how we could bring these kind of tools and research ethics that I learned in school back to this medium and thinking about sharing, right? So in thinking about reciprocity, what it means to learn from somebody and to witness and to be gifted stories and then just share it right back. You know, and ethically, with permission. And so it's just exciting.
I think we have a really long, long history of our stories being taken and shared without us, and a long, long history of us never being able to represent ourselves, never being able to speak for ourselves. And as young Indigenous folks and non-Indigenous folks on this collective who are really helpful and here to support, I think it means a lot. Like, it's mm-hmm. us taking back some really cool space.
Mm-hmm. And also, the media is a really powerful tool, which has been traditionally used against Native people in very effective ways, mm-hmm. right? It's created and perpetuated a lot mm-hmm. of ideas, a lot of misconceptions, a lot of racism mm-hmm. towards Native people. And so to have an intervention, to be sitting here, centering our own voices, speaking for ourselves, and interpreting what we're seeing around us is pretty empowering. Yeah. Without further ado, we are going to play you a song.
Alright, so that was the Discotays with For Liz. The Discotays are a Navajo band coming to you from Flagstaff, Arizona.
You are listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, and this is the University of British Columbia's very first Indigenous radio collective, and this is the very first episode. We are going to be talking about Indigenous veterans.
We thought that with Remembrance Day coming up very soon, that it would be important that we bring this issue to light. And it's a topic that's not really talked about that much. Our veterans are remembered in our hearts, but not so much in the greater narrative around Remembrance Day.
Mm-hmm. So we endeavored to explore that a little bit more and do some research to educate ourselves, too, in the first place. And then, so we're going to be talking about that with each other and just having like a pretty open conversation about it. We will be showing you some great music by some new up-and-coming Indigenous bands and artists. And then we'll always end our show segments with our newsletter. So we'll talk about what's going on in the community, events that are coming up, and then we'll talk about some federal headlines and what's been going on in Indian country.
Some new and exciting stuff. So to start out this episode, we wanted to give everybody a background in just the history about Indigenous veterans in Canada. it's a history that I honestly didn't know about until I started doing research for this show. I mean, it's so hidden, and it's, I don't think it's a story that we want to talk about as a nation on a Remembrance Day, because it's not a nice story, and it's not that nice of a history.
Like, I've known bits and pieces growing up, and I understand that there is an Indigenous Veterans Day, and I knew semblances of stories of losing status, not being able to vote, not being recognized, and so we endeavored to learn a little bit more about it. So some of the things that came up when we were talking about it with other people and researching it were basically just like the really horrible treatment of Indigenous veterans, because as we learned, they weren't actually part of the draft. They weren't considered Canadian citizens.
And there was a large amount of racism in the listing. So there's accounts of Indigenous veterans who wanted to draft, who wanted to volunteer to join the fight, and they were told that they only wanted fully European, 100% white soldiers to be in their armies. And so specifically Native folks that had Anglo-sounding names or French-sounding names were written down as being French or being English and having their identity as Native people stripped that way. And so there's this kind of, even before enlisting, this enfranchisement or stripping a status before you even begin as a Native person. So it's this complicated history where Indigenous people, Indigenous folks who are volunteering to fight, were volunteering to fight for Canada and being told that they weren't white enough to fight for Canada, but still wanted to do it anyway, and then coming home after the war and being stripped of their land and their status and their identity.
Yeah, so basically the picture is that war wasn't mandatory for Indigenous people. It wasn't a draft, but people were going anyways. And like we were thinking about that and wondering about that, and then it made so much sense. We started watching this documentary called Forgotten Warriors by Indigenous filmmaker Loretta Todd. And in there, she's interviewing these people, and they're talking about how they went because it was their country. They went because it was their land. They saw themselves as sovereign, you know. And they, this one man that she was interviewing was talking about how it was his country and how it was his land. And they also mentioned that we have, like, there was only so much land that they could keep and that they needed to fight for it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, I can only speak from what I have seen and what I've read so far. I mean, I don't know in my family if we have any family members that went to war. I'm not sure. From what I can understand and from what I heard in the documentary is that there's, like, non-Native veterans, but specifically for Indigenous veterans, there's this deep, deep love for the land you want to go and fight for. And you have so little left that you have something to fight for, and just that wanting to fight for it's enough to go.
And then you have the state being like, nope, sorry, like no Native people allowed. But then you have all these accounts of having like really wicked Native snipers.
Yeah.
And so they're like, no, sorry, you can't come. And then they're like, well, we're going to come anyways, and we're going to like kick ass for you, basically. Just this last week, November 5th, the Globe and Mail just released an article called Aboriginal Soldiers Among Canada's Top Snipers in the First World War. And it talks about how Canada was renowned for having 8 out of the top 10 most successful snipers documented in the war. And 6 of them were Indigenous. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive to think about, like, the unique skill sets and contributions of Native people who were hunters and trappers, like, and where that knowledge came into play.
Yeah, there's just that deep relationship with understanding land and how to move through forest. And I guess for the most part, the terrain in Europe and the terrain here isn't that much different. So, you know, there's just that deep knowledge you have when you go in there that a lot of other soldiers who weren't Native wouldn't have. It's kind of interesting to think about that 35% of eligible Native people volunteer to go to war, and they weren't drafted.
Yeah.
There's something like 7,000 Indigenous people who went off, and then something like 300 or 500 never came back.
Yeah,
that's on a volunteer basis.
Yeah.
Out of respect, every year at the Remembrance Day celebrations, veterans lay a wreath on the cenotaph to remember their fallen friends they lost in the war. It wasn't until 1995 that Native veterans were allowed to lay the wreath on the cenotaph with the rest of the veterans. Prior to 1995, Native veterans had to wait until the ceremony was over to lay the wreath to remember, you know, their fallen brothers and sisters of the war. And it's just things like that. I mean, that just gets astounding.
Yeah, well, some people recognize and some weren't, right? Yeah. And these narratives around patriotism and our, like, our beautiful peacekeeping nation has all these blood stories.
Yeah.
You know, and also, like, they went to war. Okay, so in the First World War, going voluntarily and then coming back and being like, oh, surprise, you were disenfranchised. Like, you don't have your Indian status anymore.
Yeah. Just for those of you who don't know, when you're disenfranchised from your land, you're stripped of your Indian status. And what I mean by Indian status is the status that First Nations, some First Nations people are given under the 1876. The 1876 Indian Act. And so, which basically says that if you...
They're all like, oh, you're Indian, you're not. This is your, like, this is how much land you get. This, if you're, like, a Native woman, just don't even bother because this is not going to work out well for you.
Yeah, more or less.
More or less.
That was...
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell, that's basically the Indian Act.
Yeah.
Only the Indian Act is not a lot of laughs.
No. No. Not less laughs.
Less laughs, more paperwork.
More loss of land. Less laughs.
Less laughs. Less land.
Yeah. Less laughs.
A lot of Native veterans, when they came back, were not allowed to return to their reserves because of a stipulation in the Indian Act that says if you're gone from your reserve for 4 or more years, you can no longer live there. You're disenfranchised. So you have these Native men and women who left the reserve to fight for Canada and with Canada, came home and weren't allowed to come back home, and also lost their rights as a status Indian person, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah, because even though the Indian Act is flawed in so many ways, without access to your land and your community and those resources.
It's just like, it's hard to really express how important the Indian Act is, yeah. Even though it's so deeply flawed, even though it's this racist piece of legislature. Mm-hmm. It's the only piece of legislation that exists that is race-based, that literally says that these people are wards of the state, these people fall under this act, we can control them this way. But even within that, it's saying that these are different rules and rights and relationships you have with the Canadian state. So losing that and being, as was looked at for Native veterans, when you came home, you did this great thing for Canada, you were awarded fully Canadian citizenship and stripped of your Indian status. Losing that means that you're losing that relationship that's been outlined in this document for you. It's losing your bargaining chip as an Indian person in Canada.
Like, we were watching this documentary and we were hearing these stories and testimonies of Indigenous veterans of being like, we got along overseas, you know, these structures kind of collapse.
Yeah, you're in war. Like, you're fighting. You're in the trenches. It's not fun. And, like, at that point, you have to fight with your band of brothers, I guess, for lack of a better... Like, you're there.
Yeah. And then people came home. They were met with the same racism that was being employed against them when they left, right? Mm-hmm. So they didn't come back with any more respect. They came back, if anything, as just more invisible, with less mm-hmm. rights. And so the same services that were offered to white veterans just were not offered to Native people because they were under the Indian Act when they came back, right?
So, like, even things like being able to access the Legion and, you know, services of the Legion for veterans, Native veterans couldn't do that because they served alcohol, and under the Indian Act, you couldn't be Native and around alcohol.
Yeah.
Because of our good old friend racism.
Yeah. Oh, racism.
Oh, racism.
You little devil.
Oh, you.
And so Sam and I, we were thinking about this and understanding all of the history and the implications of this land around the rhetorics of war and around veterans, and then thinking about our own relationship to this day as Indigenous women and how do we navigate it, right?
How do you go and commemorate in this day of mourning and remembering for Canadian veterans when you remember that your own people have this history? How do you wear a poppy and remember that? And it's a hard thing to navigate because as much as I feel or what I feel about this, I never, ever want to take away the importance of this day for some Indigenous people, because they have grandpas and great-grandpas and uncles and fathers who fought in the war and who died in the war. And that's important, and that's really, you know, that's something I think we have to hold in our hearts when we have this discussion.
Mm-hmm. And that all lives are important in general, mm-hmm. right? And that we understand this day, and that we understand the importance of honoring lives mm-hmm. and stories, mm-hmm. and we get that, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we're not sitting here being like, oh, to wear a poppy or to not wear a poppy. Like, it's bigger than that.
It's way bigger than that.
It's bigger than that. It's just the implications, right? Like, what mm-hmm. is it? What does it mean ultimately when you don't recognize your ancestry and your nationality as Canadian, mm-hmm. as a Squamish woman? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to think about like these narratives and rhetorics surrounding the war? Mm-hmm. And then how our people were treated, how my ancestors were treated, and then also my own relationship with Canada today, you know? But then, and then, like, striking the balance of wanting to honor lives, though.
Yeah. And even for me, when I really think about this day and I think of Canada at war, I think of Canada at war with my own people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think of, you know, the wars with the Métis people over our land and our right to nationhood and, like, those were outright bloody battles with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a war Canada had against us. And it's just this complicated and uncomfortable thing where you want to be there. And obviously we recognize and understand that all lives are sacred and all lives are important. But what do you do when your country didn't recognize that for a very long time?
Mm-hmm. And still doesn't, right?
Still doesn't.
Like, I mean, legislatively in some ways, but in terms of these stories, they're just not, they're not shared, you know, along with, like, well, colonialism, the old eraser, that old white eraser.
Colonial and racism. Those uncles you don't want to invite to Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Who's going to Thanksgiving, though?
Colonial
not us. It didn't work out well for us.
Well, I mean, if colonialism and racism don't show up to Thanksgiving, I guess there isn't really Thanksgiving.
True.
We'll just keep that corn.
Turkies, though? We don't.
Turkies? We don't have no turkeys.
No, I don't know.
There's no turkeys
know.
Up north. We also didn't have pilgrims. This is a weird American thing.
Yeah. Glenn calls it Thanks for Nothing Day.
Another situation that arose when our veterans came back from war is that their lives as Indigenous people in this country were very closely watched and controlled by the Indian agent. And so in order for them to access any of the services that other veterans had, they had to go through the Indian agent. And I don't know about you, but from what I heard about Indian agents, they're not exactly stand-up people. So
no, you don't invite them for dinner.
They're not invited to Thanksgiving.
No.
They created Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Thanksgiving's on them.
So you're having to ask this person that's literally in your home telling you what you can and cannot do.
Super white. White as it gets.
Like lost in a snowstorm. So the Indian agent acted as a gatekeeper to these resources that Indigenous veterans not only wanted but would need coming back from the war that non-Native veterans had easier access to. So there's just kind of this another layer to what makes this relationship so complicated on this day. And I think it's important to mention that there is a Native Veterans Day of Remembrance that happens on February 8th.
Well, basically, if you want to wear it, you wear it. And if you don't want to wear it, don't wear it.
Yeah.
Just understand that there's a history with both. There are implications for both actions.
I would never, ever judge anybody who wanted to wear a poppy. I mean, everybody has their choice. Everybody has their family histories. Everybody has their stories they carry with them. And if one of their stories means they're going to honor the poppy in Remembrance Day, I respect that. And that's real. I personally don't wear a poppy for many reasons. This history of Indigenous veterans being one and other stuff that we need a whole other radio show for. But it's never a sign of disrespect. I respect everybody's choice.
Yeah. And I mean, like Sam and I said, these questions are so much bigger than this one little action. But this one little action brings up big emotions, right? That's why it came into our minds and alongside this conversation and how important it is to have it. What are alternatives then? What else could we do you think? There's the white poppy.
Yes, the white poppy. alternative to the Red Poppy and saying that it commemorated not only our veterans who fought in the war, but also the women who were nurses, the people on the home front, and the forgotten soldiers. So Black soldiers in America, Native soldiers here, Native soldiers in America. It's remembering those who aren't often remembered on Remembrance Day. There's that as well.
That's an alternative. That's a viable alternative. I've heard of beaded poppies.
I've seen beaded
circulating.
Poppies.
So it's this, like an acknowledgement still of lives, but with an emphasis on the missing narratives around indigeneity. And also we have an indigenous women mm-hmm. who went to war mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. indigenous women who went to war knowing that they would lose their status.
Who were nurses who fought in many different ways in the war, who would come home and lose their status like the men. But as an indigenous woman, losing your status is that's a whole new story.
Mm-hmm. Not great.
Not a great story. Not a happy story. We were born long after the war. We were born in a Canada that wasn't fighting great wars, still participating in wars, but not fighting these great wars. And so we, for the most part, as people born into Canadian citizenship, never had this mind space that maybe Canada won't exist. You know, we never had to grow up thinking right. maybe we're going to be taken over by Germany. Like, yeah. We never grew up in this mind space yeah. that maybe.
Yeah, and then also just like the rhetoric of going to war for Canada. And people mm-hmm. are like, well, actually, we're going to war for our sacred waters, or we're yeah. going to war for this land where this story comes from, where that's my ancestry, or we're mm-hmm. going to war for where our ancestors are buried. Mm-hmm. Like these like rhetorics around war and around remembrance that don't fit into these boxes that mm-hmm. have been created around this day. Mm-hmm. So like wearing this poppy talks about these stories or the Remembrance Day ceremony embodies these stories and narratives about Canada, but it's missing what fueled Indigenous veterans' motives to go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or at least some of them. At least some of the stories. Yeah, at least informing the stories, like in Loretta Todd's documentary
yeah.
about why they went, mm-hmm. you know?
Talking back to those, or that idea that you went to war to protect your treaty rights, because if we lost the war, what are we going to have?
I know. And so it's like Indigenous, it's like the ironies or the levels of going to war, like for Canada in quotations, but being like, no, this is, we need what we can have at this yeah. point in time.
Indigenous folks were, if nothing, very crafty.
very crafty. Always have been.
We've lost a lot of rights. But we know how to keep the ones we got.
Yeah. And then like hustle some more out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and keep hustling.
Keep hustling for rights.
Yeah. Without further ado, we are going to play you a song. Every single ghost flying out of my mouth. They know every single poison I'm trying to sweat out. Yet they hang in the air, give you straight just a chance to hear.
You just heard Bones and Ribbon by Them Savages. Them Savages is one part Navajo and one part Mexican, and they're out of New Mexico.
The Inuit throat singers here, Samantha Medcalf and Kaylin DuPompre.
You are listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, and this is the University of British Columbia's very first Indigenous radio collective, and this is the very first episode.
So what we played for you right there were two young Inuit throat singers, Samantha Metcalf and Kaylin de Grand Pre, and they performed for the young Canadian heartthrob, Prime Minister Hot Pants, Justin Trudeau, in a swearing-in ceremony on November 4th?
4th.
4th.
Prime Minister Hot Pants.
Prime Minister Hot Pants, Junior, as an Indigenous radio collective member was calling him.
Junior.
Junior.
Okay.
Junior sexy. I actually don't find him that good-looking.
I don't mind looking at him. Where's Harper? It's just like, has like a Haida tattoo on his arm.
Apparently he was adopted in.
Oh, really?
To a Haida. Do not quote me on this.
Let's look into that.
I can feel the Haida's coming for me right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if you didn't do that. This is all like Harper, Blackfoot being adopted. It's all over again. I'm sorry.
God.
Just strike me from the earth.
That is not the same thing. I will never be able to take that burnt image of Harper in
like
the headdress
trying...
out of my head. No, okay. So swearing in ceremony.
So Justin Pierre's swearing in ceremony is
Justin Pierre. I'm sorry, Trudeau. I know you keep saying that you want to be different than your dad.
You're living in your father's shadow.
Just give us a while to transition, okay? It's going to take a second.
Okay, the young Trudeau.
The young Trudeau.
His swearing-in
Trudeau
ceremony.
Junior.
So Junior's swearing-in ceremony happened a couple days ago, and it was making and still making the headlines with his more liberal?
Liberal. Great word.
Thanks.
On point.
Really. Has been making the headlines for the past couple days due to his, what some are calling, affirmative action.
Affirmative action.
Inaction.
Inaction.
Due to him appointing a 50% female cabinet, which has struck a lot of men rights activists on Reddit the wrong way. A lot of men in their basements, their mother's basements, are just fiercely typing right now, just being like, I hate it. What about the men?
Yeah, what about the men, hey?
Not all men.
Not all
Make
men.
It to cabinet.
In Junior's.
In Junior's
cabinet.
No, not all men. Make it to Junior's cabinet.
Junior's cabinet.
Anyway.
Not all men.
Not all men.
So, opened with a drummer.
Yes.
And an acknowledgement of Algonquin territory.
Which was led in by a young Cree and Potawatomi drummer, Thalen Kicknosway. I am so sorry.
Thalen, if you're listening.
Thalen, I'm sorry. I owe you $20.
So, opened with him drumming and an acknowledgement of traditional Algonquin territory.
Which is huge in Parliament. Huge.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely like it riles up a lot of emotion, right? So you have people heralding and be like, oh my God, that's so amazing. And there's a part of me that's like, no, that's legit. I'll take that. But then another part of me is like, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's not land, but I'll thanks. You
yeah.
know?
I mean, watching
Thalen.
Shouts out. Watching him drum in the procession and begin that ceremony and listening to my first reaction is just like very like visceral, like emotional reaction, which I was very surprised because I'm not an emotional person. And I was just like, man, that's so awesome. Like,
and that's gotta count for something, that feeling, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of naysayers out there right now, like talking about whether it's good, talking about whether it's bad, but another thing to listen to is just that feeling.
That like
you know
feeling you get, and she's like hearing Cree drumming and singing and watching it happen in Rideau Hall and just, like, seeing that happen. What a time to be alive where sitting at my computer and I come across so many negative things about Indigenous people. I've read so much about reconciliation this week and so much about our missing sisters. And I look at this video and I see this young Cree youth leading in the Prime Minister.
PM,
drumming and singing a song that honors our missing and murdered sisters. Like, that says something. That, I mean, say what you will about the system, say what you will about the current political climate, say what you will about Canada as a nation state, but that act right there, that was really cool.
Yeah, it was just cool,
it
right?
It was just cool.
As much as we need to, like, dissect this and dissect that, there's just something to be said to stop and take in a moment. And also, like, the throat singers. Can we go back to the throat singers and to be like, sure, you know, Trudeau, Junior, PM, you said some interesting things, and that's what I'm taking them right now, is things that you've said. Mm-hmm. But in action, though, is making space for bomber girls who just stole the show.
And you know what? That was probably the first time there was throat singing in Rideau Hall.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Like, I don't know. How often are there land acknowledgments in there?
Never.
Because the state doesn't work well for the state to acknowledge land.
The very act of young Trudeau acknowledging they're on Algonquin territory is saying Canada's illegitimate. He's saying, like, he said, and I don't think he meant to. Like, this is like
he's
a thing.
He's like, oh, slip up.
He was like, oh, Freudian slip.
Yeah.
It's just like him being like, I want to acknowledge we're in Algonquin territory, is saying, I want to acknowledge that this government I'm a leader of is a sham.
Yeah, IHOPM, you know? Yeah.
Light cigarette rides off in a motorcycle.
But tattoo blaring.
Hide a tattoo blaring in the sun. I think my favorite thing, though, is you need to go to the CBC article of the two Inuit girls throat singing. And as they're singing, watch Justin's face. He does not know what's going on. Mm. Like, I don't think any briefed him. He's just like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And maybe
he's like, oh, what have I done here? I've given these Native people a big stage.
He's like,
and
there's a lot of Indians
here. He's like, I might have underestimated myself.
Sacre bleu.
Yeah, you make an invite, we'll come.
Beaucoup de octocton.
So, yeah, there's lots going on, lots to take in. And then we also have Jody Wilson Raybould.
We owe you $20 too, Jody. Yeah. You're in Vancouver. You can probably come collect.
Yeah. In fact, I live in your district. I live in Vancouver Granville. She is our newly elected MP, Liberal, Indigenous from Wayuukai Nation. Also, we
probably owe you another $20.
Might owe that nation each a hug.
Hug.
I don't got no money.
Because I think there's like...
I'm a student radio broadcaster.
I'm not a student, but I still got no money.
Yeah, I can't afford to get any more.
We owe you a hug. And if you're not down with a hug, a very firm handshake.
Mm-hmm. A good Squamish handshake.
A good Métis handshake.
So, elected Minister of Justice.
I think it says volumes to have an Indigenous woman as a Minister of Justice.
Yeah.
If you think of the state of justice in Canada for our sisters.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all these important conversations going around, right? There are all these voices saying, yeah, this is a step forward in the right direction. And you have people saying this is so important. Then you have people saying, we're fighting on the wrong side here. These aren't our battles. You know, as sovereign nations, what does putting our people in a structure that is meant to, is like a settler colonial structure that is meant to further subordinate Native people, what kind of power do you have?
Yeah, and you know? I think an article by Pamela Palmwater came out pre-Junior's office talking about how we don't necessarily need a First Nations cabinet minister for Indigenous and Northern Affairs. Now it's Indigenous and Northern Affairs. Before it was, what was it called?
Aboriginal and Northern
Development. I don't know. Basically, Dewey Cheatham and Howe cabinet.
Yeah.
Like
Dewey Cheatham and Howe. Right.
Anyway, the cabinet of Northern drilling and fracking. Anyway, so.
The cabinet of we underspend billions of dollars. Oh, you want a drinking water?
The cabinet of, oh, I'm sorry, lettuce is 80 bucks? My bad.
My bad.
Don't you eat whale blubber anyway?
Don't you eat whale, but don't eat seals.
No seals.
No seals for you.
Don't touch the seals. Mm-mm. We'll have to call Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Ellen DeGen.
Ellen DeGen. What's that one doesn't believe in vaccinations? Jenny McCartney. I feel like she is against the seal.
She probably hates seal hunt, loves them seals too.
Yeah. She's like, you know what? I love those seals, but never vaccinate them. Back to what I was saying about Pamela Palmater, writing about how we don't necessarily need a First Nations cabinet minister, Indigenous and Northern Affairs, because we need our leaders to be in our nations fighting for us, not in the nation state's government fighting for the state. And having our people in these positions in the state is further just going to legitimize the state and not helping us fight on a nation-to-nation basis like we should be for our rights and for our lands, which is a really interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, and I mean, we're both graduates of the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program, we should mention.
FNSP, First Nations Studies program, way back when Cook'em Sam did it.
Yeah,
Cook'em Sam. A year ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is what we study, like critical conversations and engagements around our relationship with the nation state, with each other, mm-hmm. conversations about gender. And so, in like, we have all these theory and these tools to understand what we're working with. And I think that is so important, that mm-hmm. we can be critical and understand these things. But I also, I really hate the shaming around also just celebrating the victory. Like, we have an mm-hmm. Indigenous woman from B.C., who's sitting as the Minister of Justice. She's this, like, rockin' lawyer mm-hmm. from UBC. And as much as there are structures that are going to impede her from doing the work that she wants to do, who are we to say that she's not going to be able to kick down some pretty important walls, right?
Like, we have this just rad Indigenous woman in office right now.
Mm-hmm. Let's herald that as, like, something to be excited about.
You know, it wasn't so long ago we couldn't even vote, you know? Mm-hmm. Status Indian people couldn't leave the reserve without permission. And mm-hmm. now we have this bomb-ass woman there to just, like, rep and do these great things.
Yeah, and we don't have to, and we're not disillusioning ourselves, right? No. We're not going to assume that this move from the Trudeau government now means that this is a different government, that mm-hmm. it's not a colonial government, that it doesn't have, a very violent and oppressive mm-hmm. ongoing relationship with Indigenous people and other subordinated people of color. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to claim these things. But what's all this work worth if we don't stop sometimes and think about these powerful moves, you know?
It's just these small celebrations we can have in time that celebrate the success of our people.
Of our people. And also, there, as much as we need to be theorizing, there's also, like, let's give this woman the agency that this is a move she wanted. Mm-hmm. This is the work that she wants to be doing, and she's achieved part of her goal there. Mm-hmm. Can we not stand beside her in solidarity mm-hmm. and say, while we're doing the own work that we want to yeah. be doing in our communities, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
Whatever that work looks like and wherever you're going to be putting your energy, can we not feel some compassion and excitement for someone doing their own work in the yeah. ways they want to be doing it?
We've been pitted against each other in so many different mm-hmm. ways as Indigenous people, in so many different and insidious ways that I think even through all the theorizing, even through all our critical thought and our hard-earned critical thought skills that we've mm-hmm. developed and we've had nurtured by our wonderful professors, we just have to take a moment to lift each other up mm-hmm. and celebrate each other's successes. And we are really nothing if we're not lifting each other up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just sometimes have to take a step back and just remember what's good and what we're here for. And we're here for each other.
What's good?
What's good?
Miley, what's good?
Miley, what's good?
And yeah, so, I mean, I'm not trying to discourage critical thought. People that are creating alternative narratives, it's yeah. important because these are people that sober us too, because yeah. it's easy to become comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, like, I was emotional during the election and thinking, what's it going to mean if we have a perceived victory, a perceived, like, big change in the state, but we know as Indigenous people what's going to stay the same unless we do this work,
mm-hmm.
because no one's going to help us in this work because mm-hmm. it's not in anybody else's best interest other than our own, right? And that's how it's always been. We've always fought for our own rights and our own land and our own resources and mm-hmm. our own stories and people. So it's been emotional, right? So these critical voices are so important. I just think it's how we talk about it. And it's like the shaming, right?
Yeah, there's just so much shaming.
Lots of different thoughts circulating on this 50-50 cabinet.
There's a lot of opinions. And I think if we go back to an article written by Leanne Simpson a few years ago called Queering Resurgence, where she talks about the incorporation of Indigenous women into band councils, where the representation of women in these structures doesn't necessarily signal that there's going to be a change.
In the structure.
It's just kind of, you know.
That the same damaging relationship is going to ensue and that gender isn't going to change these power structures here, right?
You know, the thing is that we still have 50% representation of women in cabinet, which is pretty awesome. And I don't know. I think women do some amazing things.
Yeah, and Leanne's writing this in a different context, but though that's a teaching, right? She shared a teaching that we can think about. And I think it's important to vocalize that so you can understand your limitations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, anywhere where there's a less or a lower concentration of old, wrinkly white dudes, I'm really down for that.
Yeah, it's welcomed, right?
It's welcomed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some old, wrinkly white women in there. Personally, I have no interest in sitting around and waiting for Junior to do something cool. I know I have work to do for my nation and my people and my communities I'm a part of, and I plan to still do that work. Maybe I'll sit a little bit and look at him.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think it was also just surprising.
Yeah.
I think the swearing-in ceremony just maybe caught people off guard, too.
And it should have.
And which is good, right? We have our drummer and our throat singers and our jiggers.
Yes, our Red River jiggers.
Yeah, it was just surprising. It just caught me off guard, and I took a little bit to process it.
Yeah, and I believe Carolyn Bennett, the new minister for Indigenous and Northern Affairs, did her swearing-in, and she held a sash, a sage, and an eagle feather. So we have this white woman becoming the minister of this very controversial and complicated cabinet that's been actually horrific, and for Harper's regime was run by your favorite racist Canadian uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have this white woman leading this cabinet who comes into her swearing-in ceremony holding these secret medicines. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we will see.
I'm out here to bat.
I'm also kind of like, I'm like, you better be careful because that is some serious stuff you are holding.
And I'm like, you can only tell truths when you hold that.
Yeah.
And like, Creator knows. Like, Creator is always watching. Let's do good work.
Yeah. And so I think it's like a matter of maintaining our own commitments to our communities and our own nation building, holding somebody accountable to the things that he said. And I think squeezing some money out of him. I think that we'll be able. Like, certainly with Harper, there's, like, Mr., like, colonialism doesn't exist in Canada for things like restorative justice or for social programming or things.
And I think having the land acknowledgement was that first step towards respect. But I think right now we need a lot of reciprocity because I think we've given a lot. We've given a lot to this country.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly we didn't want to. Mostly it was taken. Usually violently. So it'd be nice to get a little bit back.
Mm-hmm.
I already hear an email now being like, don't you get free schooling?
Oh, God. No. Mind your own business.
I don't. And I also pay a lot of tax.
All the tax.
A lot of tax.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your patience as we navigate our very first episode for the Indigenous Collective, yet to be named.
TBA, hopefully next Monday.
Yeah.
Thank you for sitting down and sitting with us and listening to our words. We will be a little more organized next week, but we're very thankful that you took out time of your busy Monday morning to listen to us.
And thank you again to our Musqueam hosts, to whom we are grateful.
And to CITR. And I also want to say thank you to this guy who was recording in the studio across from us, who watched me dance to not only Trap Queen, but I Can't Feel My Face, and this great song by Redbone.
Yeah. Things got a bit weird in the Studio C tonight, folks. So that happens when you let That's what happens when you let Indians into your space.
It gets weird.
It gets weird.
We dance. We sing.
Dance. A lot of laughter.
A lot of laughter.
Yeah.
A lot of laughter. So
yeah.
Thank you for sitting with us, for laughing with us. And we look forward to another episode.
All right. Thank you.
pepper shaker. Who's that coming? Barack Obama's running. As our twin son approaches and niggas poach this, it a beginning or an end like when a snow chips. The abyss is calling on me, feet on all these phony hippies sounding, hounding, pounding my knees. Buffalo. I threw the fish out of water, shot my paddle, folks say, I'm lost, yet some minutes of sweet, sweet death. Until I hear her call, my girl, she called me home, my girl. If you was a planet, well, I'd be home. Stronger, you'd be a black hole, honey, a black hole, honey. The horse chief, headdress and more thief, it's a little strange to become a child. Now how are you gonna spit us up now? Oh, we must speak up. Shake, oh, who's that coming? Barack Obama's running.
All right, so you just heard Horse Chief War Thief by Ghost Keeper, a Métis band out of Calgary.
Hello, that was Redbone, a Native American band, the first ever to make top five on the U.S. billboards. Sam and I are tuning out. Thanks again for listening. Haichka Siem to our Musqueam hosts. And next, from 12 to 1, is Synchronicity by Marie Bernard. And you can tune in to our Indigenous Collective next Monday again from 11 to 12. Thank you.